pretend like you're in the movie The Quiet Place, and like any noise you make is going to cause aliens. Seen that, except for
the monsters will get us.
Except for you can talk. Okay. That's the difference. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Los Angeles, California, I am the host, Cassidy Robinson, and with me today from Long Beach, we have a friend of the show, Amanda Kowalski. You've been on before.
I sure have. What's up, kids?
And with us again, for the second time, I think, is our friend Katie. Do you mind me using your last name?
Yeah, go for it.
Katie Tambor, who works at the Titmouse Animation in Hollywood.
Yes, yes, I do. Yeah, this is my second time on here. Yes. And, oh, sorry, I need to speak up.
Katie doesn't have an outdoor voice.
No relation to Jeffrey Tambor, so it's clear.
No, yeah. There's an E in my last name. It's
yeah, please don't air your grievances to Katie.
Yes, no, I'm not.
Today we're going to be talking about Sorry to Bother You, which I kind of made you go see with me, but...
No, I was going to go see that no matter what.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that wasn't too hard of an ask.
No, it's amazing. We can't get there yet.
And at the end of the program, we're going to do the Netflix homework that you guys assigned us, not the Netflix homework that we announced last week with Keith, which I don't even remember what it was now. But you had me watch the animated film...
April in the Extraordinary World. Which he cannot remember.
A French, Belgian, and Canadian.
Canadian co-production.
Yeah. All the French in the world. Well, just probably somewhere else. There's no Creole.
No Creole France in here. So, I don't know if it's been a while since you guys have been on. We've kind of like jazzed up the show a little. We have a few new segments. And the way we open this up now is with a segment called Consume Obey, where we talk about the media that we've been consuming as of late. Okay. This could be books. This can be podcasts. This can be movies, music, whatever you've been digging lately. And I'll start with Katie. Katie, what have you been consuming lately? What's your jam?
Well, Amanda told me about a podcast that I've been kind of addicted to. It's called Risk. It's a really intense podcast.
Yeah, it can be, yes.
Yeah, they,
Kevin Allison, right? From the state.
And they tell, they get these speakers to tell these really intense personal stories, and, they make you feel like a lot of things. Yeah, they had this one on, they had a really long one not too long ago about this dog and this dog gets really sick and it's just like I don't know.
Well, do you know who the speaker was on that particular?
I don't remember. Do you remember?
I think his name is David Crabb. I could be wrong on the last name, but I think that's what his name is. And he goes through this really emotional trial of like trying to find out if he should let his dog die or if he should keep like fighting for him to live. And like, it's a very long, long story. It gets really emotional because he's a gay man and this is the only like child he's ever had. So it gets really, really, really emotional. It was hard to listen to.
Point it's like this dog is suffering, like put him out of his misery.
Yeah.
Like,
it's very difficult.
Like I felt for his plight, but I was just like at one point they were like spending so much money on like these vet bills and surgeries and like I don't know if I could.
I used to dip into Risk back in the day. Yeah. And even though that particular story you're talking about is kind of depressing, I know that like from even within this one episode, the stories can vary. Like sometimes they're funny, sometimes mm-hmm. they're filthy, mm-hmm. sometimes they're super depressing or really heavy like that. I get the conceit of the show is that they, you have to take whatever story you're telling is some sort of risk. It's not something you would just talk to with the person sitting next to you on a bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it's risky to tell the story. But I've listened to a few episodes of that and, yeah, I wholeheartedly endorse. I didn't know that was still a show because I was listening back in like 2015.
Oh, yeah. No, it keeps going. They're also coming out with a book soon of stories about risk, like stories that have been shared on risk, but then also stories that haven't been on the show that have just been like they didn't make it, but they thought they were really good. And mm-hmm. yeah, so that's coming out soonish. I'm not going to like. I'm not giving away Kevin's like book or anything.
We're
like that.
Shilling for risk here.
Well, they're shilling hard. So.
Okay, what about you, Amanda? What have you been consuming?
Oh my God! I mean, I am like the media consumer. I read a lot of books. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of musics. I read comics. I watch movies all the damn time. Like I mean, okay.
What do you want to promote?
All right. So recently I read Kurt Vonnegut. I read his first novel, which is called Player Piano, which is, it's about this like alternate version of like the future. This is written in the early 50s. And, so everything has been taken over by machines and like people have lost their jobs and everything like that. It's really a downer, but it's also a comedy, which is very much Kurt Vonnegut. Mm-hmm. And when we were reading it, I'm in a book club at work. that's my life. I don't knit, but I might as well. My buddy has read every single Vonnegut book and he decided to end on the first novel he's ever written. And, the reason that he was ending on that one is because he heard that it just wasn't nearly as good. Mm-hmm. And I disagree. I've read a lot of Kurt Vonnegut. I have a Kurt Vonnegut tattoo on my leg. It's very, very much his voice. So if you're a Vonnegut fan, I actually do recommend it. It's not going to be as good. It's like one of the only books in which you can definitely tell that it was written in the past.
Okay.
Like it definitely has.
It dates a little harder.
It definitely dates itself. Yeah. It feels very much like people from the 1950s looking into the future and like what the future might hold. And yeah, it definitely dates itself a lot. There's a lot of like tubes and, and like everything's run on tape, okay. and stuff like that, which is not, you know, a thing now.
Right. So, but I feel like if somebody were to adapt that now, they would just like turn that into a style.
It's been adapted. It's been adapted. But yeah, it's very retrofuturism, which I enjoy. So it was kind of fun to look at. But there's a lot of like instances of like women being portrayed as like just gold diggers and stuff like that, which I don't really enjoy, but makes sense for the time, I guess. Yeah. So that's one. I'm reading Sex Criminals, which is the best comic book of all time.
I need to read that series.
Yeah. It's on like, I think issue 25 and it just finished its arc and. It's amazing. It had like a slow burn for a little bit where I was like, I don't know if this is getting worse or better, but it definitely got better in this arc than it has been lately. And also the letters in the back of the issue, people send in letters and the writer gives like advice, but also just like general commentary. And I highly, highly recommend reading that because in some cases, that's actually more interesting than the comic book. And the comic book, again, is my favorite thing ever. And I've read a lot of comic books, but this is my favorite comic book. So, yeah, highly recommend Sex Criminals because it needs to be. I think it's being adapted for a TV show.
Yeah.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I did that news story on this very show like last year, maybe even longer than that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're just kind of dragging their feet on production or if they're just trying to wait to figure out how to do it. But yeah.
Like I would say it would be along the lines of like the mood of like True Blood.
Okay.
And not in like
style.
I don't actually like True Blood very much, but but like just the mood of like magical things that happen, but also it's very like funny and making fun of magical realism kind of shit right. that happens.
And anyway, kind of sleazy.
Yeah, and a little sleazy. Yeah. So yeah, but very, very good and very emotional. More emotional than you would think from something like this. So yeah.
Okay. My thing, I said on the show last week that I went home and visited my folks in my hometown of Pocatello, Idaho. But before I did that, I went to Program Sound, which is that little skate shop where we saw that Mom Jeans concert. I went there and checked out another band, a band from San Diego called CU Space Cowboy. They're an up-and-coming kind of hardcore screamo act.
I understood that reference.
You did. I looked right at you when I said it because I knew you would.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the most violent thing I've been to.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you've been in that space. It's about the size of this living room and kitchen.
It's tinier than that because it's full of like clothing racks and shoe racks and stuff like that. So yeah. It's, you know, it's a bigger space, but it's packed full of shit. And then you pack a whole bunch of people in there with instruments and a band. And it's just like tiny. There's no room to move. No room to go. Yeah. Well,
it was pretty much entirely occupied by Orange County fuckboys.
Oh, God.
And... I, you know, as a person who enjoys...
She's just not understanding that. No, I've heard the phrase, but it would be helpful to just know what a definition. Like, I've been hearing it thrown around, but I only have, like, I don't even understand.
I don't even know if I was using it appropriately, but I thought it was a good place to drop it.
Just Google F-U-C-C-B-O-I.
My usage is probably incorrect. You know, I enjoy heavy music as much as the next guy, and I don't mind if people want to have fun to the show and, like, the want to dance hard or mosh or whatever. I know the rules. I can kind of stand by the side of the pit and watch the show and let the kids do their thing in the pit. But there was a ton of people crowd killing, which means they start swinging their fists indiscriminately into the crowd, or kicking and spin kicking and doing stuff like that. At one point, one of the kids grabbed his friend by the shoulders and lifted him up and had his friend paddling his feet in the air and then swinging him around like a weapon. I was like, that's not even a thing.
Wait, this is the band or the audience?
This is the audience.
Jeez. Yeah, people are stupid at concerts.
Yeah, I took a couple kicks and punches that, you know, not like anybody was trying to start a fight. It was just from kids swinging their arms all around and didn't care who they hit. And I pushed them back out. So it wasn't that bad. But the band played well. It was their kickoff show to their first cross-country tour. They're gaining a lot of notoriety between the time that I discovered them around 2015 to now. They've only been getting bigger, and I know they're doing their first LP here pretty soon. So if you're a fan of stuff like, I don't know, who do I compare them to? A little bit kind of, they have sort of a Blood Brothers vibe to them. And some like dance punk influence, but also like super heavy grindcore parts with like blast beats and screaming and kind of the mix of the two. So if you're to me, they sound like distinctly a San Diego band. Like if you're into any of that, like hardcore stuff from the 90s of San Diego bands, like Gravity Records and 3-1-G and that kind of stuff, the Locust bands like that, they are of that ilk. But yeah, they're kind of cool. I dug it. And I bought a couple of their 7 inches.
I understood about 3 of those words. The Locusts were 2 of them. Okay. I know that's a band. So, yeah, there you go.
That's that segment. We're going to go ahead and get into the movie news now.
All right.
Movie news. Talking about that movie news.
Go ahead and pull up that Joaquin story that just came up today.
Yeah.
Okay, Joaquin Phoenix to star in a standalone Joker movie, I guess alongside or parallel to the Jared Leto Joker movie that still might be happening.
Yeah.
So we just read this, actually, and I forgot which one was which, but this is the one where Hangover director Todd Phillips was set to direct.
Yeah, so Todd Phillips is going to be directing, and I don't know if that means it's going to be comedic,
I doubt it.
And I hope it doesn't. I don't think that it should be comedic at all. It's the Joker's not a funny character, even despite his name. Right. So it should not be a comedy. And if it is, it's going to be terrible. I don't know if it's going to be terrible anyway, but I know that that could very much spell disaster. So
also, they're talking about trying to do a quick turnover.
Yeah, and the quick turnover, they said that it's going to start shooting in September and could be out as early as, like very early 2019.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea. That should be in development for at least a year. Otherwise, it's definitely going to be bad. I can understand why they would want to do it early, because they want to release it in the earlier parts rather than release it during, like,
blockbuster season
in the summer. I understand that as a concept.
And they probably want to beat the other Joker movie.
Yeah, and they probably want to beat the other Joker movie, which is going to be with Jared Leto, which is also going to be fucking awful, in my opinion.
Friend of the show, Jared Leto. Kind of a running joke here. We have a shit on Jared Leto segment of the show where he usually pops up in the news at some point and Keith goes off on how much he hates Jared Leto.
Have I told you that I met Jared Leto? He's a douchebag.
What did he do?
He's just a douchebag in like every sense of the term.
Yeah, but like you met, did he do something douchey to you?
Just in general. Like,
just
it
a
was
famous,
like
yeah. Don't make direct eye contact, only green M&M sort of way.
Yeah, very much like that. Yeah, just kind of like Katherine Heigl is a general douchebag, you know? Like, I didn't specifically meet her. It's just when I worked at a film festival for about a year. No, less than a year. But, yeah, she was at one of our premieres, and she's also a douchebag. She's the one
who
she was supposed to be in town for the variety party that was for the festival, but they had to send her a plane, and she would not accept a smaller plane than the largest 747 because she needed specifically to be in first class, not business class, because that wasn't good enough for her. Mm-hmm. So she waited until there was another plane that she could get on so that she could get onto that first class. And she was 3 hours late to the party that she was by contract supposed to be at. So
Amanda spilling the tea here on Jabber the Drum.
Tea
here's
about the hot high goal. Okay? Now
Jabber and the Drone does not endorse any of these.
That's just a general like commentary,
right?
That is a true story. I wasn't there. I wasn't at that party. I was working another event at the time. But a friend of mine actually said that he did meet her and she was super nice to him. So. I don't know. Like
listeners decide.
But yeah, and then Jared Leto, it wasn't like a movie related thing. It wasn't like when I was at the premiere of anything or whatever. It was just a concert that I went to when he was in 30 Seconds to Mars. And right. This is like beginning of 30 Seconds to Mars. I was in high school.
Early 2000s.
Yeah. And I didn't really care about his band because I don't really like them. But
fair enough.
But I wanted to meet Jared Leto because I loved him as an actor. And so I wanted to get his autograph. And so everybody was crowding around him. This is at a festival and at his booth for like
merch. So he was just like chilling with the hoi polloi. I would think that being an actor and stuff, they would just immediately hide in a trailer or green room.
Well, that's the thing is that like, so he's at a merch booth with a line of people around like trying to get his autograph, which he is specifically there for, like said during the concert that he will be at the merch booth at this time to sign autographs and stuff like that. And then we get there and he's calling his manager and saying there's too many people around him and like, get these people away from me and blah, 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 blah. Like just being a total dick with like ninth graders in front of him. And it's like, okay, big old fuck yous. Like, I don't need to be around you like that if you're going to be like a total dick bag. I mean, again, this could be like he was having a real rough time. But I'm just saying, like, if you make the time and you say that you're going to do this, and then by the time you actually do that, it's like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. You're a dick. You're
Katie,
a bit of a dick.
How do you feel about there being two Joker movies?
Oh, you're right. I'm so sorry. You can cut out. That has nothing to do with anything. My apologies.
Well, like the other Joker movie being like the Christopher Nolan like Joker movie, or like
the Jared Leto one would be connected to the DCU, the greater DCU. It'd be sort of a, I guess, a spin-off of Suicide Squad, which was the first movie, they premiered that version of the Joker. I think he might have had a small itty-bitty cameo in Justice League. I don't remember.
I didn't watch it. I would not know.
But, so that one would be connected to that.
I never watched Suicide Squad. I mean,
you're fine.
Yeah. So I've been told. I've been told I have not been missing much.
The reputation alone.
Yeah.
But this other one, the Joaquin Phoenix one, is more just kind of like, I guess, like a standalone, a non-canonical, just Joker movie. You know, I don't even know if they'll mention Batman or Gotham or things like that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like an origin story?
This might be, that might be interesting, but like, it could be like, it could be like a reimagining of some of the Joker. I read a lot of Joker comics specifically, because I think Joker's more interesting than the Batman. But there's a ton of different like storylines of his origin. So they could be doing one of them, you know?
Yeah, like the one that I know is like him like falling into like a vat of like what is like acid.
And then the other one is like well that actually is related to
The Killing Joke.
Yeah. Which that one is just like the idea that like all it takes is one bad day for somebody to become as insane as him, you know. I don't know. That could be interesting. It could be interesting. The fact that it's Jared Leto's take on the Joker is not interesting to me because I don't like the way he was portrayed, and I don't like the way that he was all tatted up as if he were like a gang member, because that really didn't like, it didn't make sense to me when it comes to the actual character of the Joker. So I'm not really interested in that at all. Not that's not even specifically because I don't like Jared Leto. It's just because
the take was already weird.
Yeah, the take was already a weird choice, and it didn't really look good to me.
I think we know that Joaquin Phoenix is good at being intense.
Yeah,
and he's kind of methody.
Yeah, I'm actually good on him as the Joker. Like, I know he's a pretty interesting.
At one point, he almost had the he almost had Doctor Strange.
Oh, that like
he was very, very close to landing that, and then right at the zero hour, he jumped off, and they got Benedict instead. But and I would have really liked to see that.
I would have liked to see that. I would have been really interested in that. I like him as an actor. He is very method, so he'll probably do some weird shit like Jared Leto pulled, but
sending dildos in the mail or whatever,
and sending like dead rats to people, whatever. So yeah, he might pull some pranks. He might not do that at all and just do the damn thing. But you know, I don't have any problem with him. I actually have more of a problem with Todd Phillips as a director. Like I said before, I don't want it to be a comedy.
Okay, can I interject?
Yeah, totally.
And this will go along with my slow process of turning this into a punk rock podcast. Todd Phillips made a film when he was a student. It was his first student film, and it was released wide, and I believe you can, I've watched it on YouTube, and I think you can buy it on DVD, called Hated, the story of Gigi Allen. Are you familiar with Gigi Allen?
I sure am. Not.
Gigi Allen was kind of a punk rock shock rocker from the late 80s, early 90s. And he was very self-destructive. He would go on stage nude and cut himself up, which a lot of people have done. That goes as far back as Iggy Pop. But he would also take...
What band is this?
This is Gigi Allen and the Murder Family? I don't remember.
Okay.
He had a few different bands, but he was always the lead singer. But he would go on stage nude, and then he would take laxatives and defecate all over the stage and throw it into the audience. He would cover it himself in it and run into the audience and grab people.
Jesus.
He would assault people. And people would go to these shows specifically for this. He would, you know, pick up his excrement, shove it in his mouth, and spit it out into the crowd. He was very, very addicted to heroin and alcohol and all sorts of things. He was in jail for molesting somebody, and then was released on bail, at which point Todd Phillips started doing this little documentary following him on this small tour.
Oh, this is a documentary.
This is a documentary did called Hated. Okay. This is the first thing Todd Phillips ever did. And if you see that documentary and then see the sensibility of that, because he doesn't necessarily turn him into, it's not a moralistic documentary. It's very much fly on the wall. And in a weird way, they kind of become friends. And by the end of the documentary, he dies of a heroin overdose. And he had like a suicide pact every time he was on a talk show, like Maury or something like that. He would always talk about how on such and such date, he's going to kill himself. And if any fans want to join him, they can. He did it, but I don't think it was on his one of those dates. I think he just died on accident. But that was G.G. Allin. If you take that sensibility and then look at like that in context with stuff like The Hangover and Hangover 2 and Old Dogs and like all of the or not Old Dogs, what was it?
War Dogs.
War Dogs. And, yeah. Which I haven't seen that one actually.
It's actually good. It's pretty good.
I heard that one was okay.
It's yeah. okay. Yeah.
But he has kind of a mean sensibility in his comedy. And he got a lot of flack for that at the time. It's kind of being bro-ish and kind of being sort of frat boy-ish.
Hangover's definitely frat boy.
Yeah. But then when you see Hated and you see that, you see he has a kind of an edge to him mm-hmm. that he's trying to suppress with those like kind of mainstream comedies. Mm-hmm. I think if he brought a little bit – if he treated the Joker in the same kind of objectivity that he treated G.G. Allin when he was touring with him as an 18-year-old student filmmaker, mm-hmm. that could be interesting.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying he has to make it like a faux documentary or something like that, but to be able to have that sort of disdain for the audience.
That would – okay. Sorry. But that would be an interesting movie that I would watch in like a like Henry's portrait of a serial killer type of like faux documentary where they like follow the Joker. I would be so into that. But that's never going to happen. All right, moving on.
Scarlett Johansson drops out of Rub and Tug, a trans film, a film where she was supposed to play a trans male. And I actually didn't super follow this story, so I don't know, like, the particulars of what this plot was supposed to be, but there was a huge backlash against the idea of her playing a trans male, and I guess the idea was there is a trans community that would like representation in a movie. Why not go for them rather than having a famous actress who just happens to have a husky voice? Mm-hmm. And I think that there was some criticism there. There might have been some criticism to the actual plot. Does it say anything about what this movie was about? Rub and Tug tells the story of Jean Marie Gill, who was assigned female at birth, but was assumed identity of a man. Dante texts Gill and operated a massage parlor and prostitution business, blah, 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 1970s and 80s. So, okay, so it kind of also plays into the cliche of every trans story we see in Hollywood is about a prostitute. So mm-hmm. I think people are kind of over that as well. But she decided to drop out. The backlash was big. She authored some sort of apology or something like that on Twitter or maybe a more formal apology in like an open letter or something like that. But she's not going to be doing it now. Opinions?
It's a good idea for her. Absolutely. Yeah. ScarJo, I mean, for her to respectfully say this isn't all right and we should be giving trans actors the right to play trans characters, that's totally understandable.
Yeah.
100%. And kind of great that she would go to the lengths of just refusing to do it. So, yeah, it's a good idea for her, especially because of backlash. I don't have any comments about the movie because I didn't hear about it until I found out that she wasn't doing it.
Yeah, it's the same boat. I just saw that on Facebook.
I think it'd be interesting. I think it's kind of, I don't know, like who would replace her for it. And I'm worried that because she is dropping out, they're going to give it to just some random other, you know, female with a husky voice, you know?
Right. I don't think so. I think for the studio at this point would be making a huge mistake if they went that route. And whichever actress decided to step in, they would be making a huge mistake because the backlash would still be there. So I think at this point, if they're going to continue the project, I would imagine they're going to try and find a trans actor
to play it. Yeah, they're probably feeling that pressure.
What is interesting is that it's the same director, Rupert Sanders, who did Ghost in the Shell, where she played
a Japanese
woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I didn't see the movie before. From what I hear, did you see it?
I did.
Yeah, and it has that weird, like, twist in which, like, the reason that she is presented as white is because, like, her face was changed.
Yeah,
something.
They tried to write it out.
That's some bullshit. Yeah.
They tried to write it out in such a way because people were already complaining before that movie came out. So, yeah, there's just a whole lot of baggage involved with this story.
So, yeah, I mean, the fact that it's the same director who already has questionable,
learned his lesson.
Yeah, who has questionable casting decisions, you know, in the first place, and then did the same thing again with the same actress. And she's like, I don't think I should do that again. That makes a lot of sense.
This is fun. Let's brainstorm. What minority is this directing acting team going to try and tackle next?
Oh, God. Oh, no.
A story about a Native American starring Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of already did that in Kimmy Schmidt, so right. I don't think they can do that again.
What about you, Katie? You think this is a good move for ScarJo?
Oh, absolutely. I just don't have much to add. Yeah, I think it's a good move. They're probably feeling the pressure to. I hope they make the right decision to cast somebody who's, I don't know, it's an opportunity too, maybe for like some up and coming young actor who's trans. And
I'm not so sure the story needs to be told, for one, just hearing what it's about. Like, why do we need another story about a trans person working in the sex industry called Rub and Tug, which sounds like a fetish movie?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, I don't understand why they're making the movie, but I don't know anything about the character as well, who's an actual person. And it seems like...
Maybe there's a heroic story somewhere in there. But.
So okay. It seems that he wasn't actually, like, a sex worker, but he hired sex workers for massage parlors. So, like, he ran the massage parlors. So that seems kind of like a pimp. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, given what we just learned also about the director, I'm kind of nervous about, like what kind of movie is this going to be?
Yeah.
Like,
the movie itself, I'm a little concerned about anyway. Like,
is this going to be a positive movie for the transgender community? Now I'm not so sure. Yeah. Like.
And will there or will there not be cyborgs?
All right.
Let's go ahead and talk about Sorry to Bother You.
Oh, we're starting with that first?
We're going to start with you, Netflix Homework Last.
Okay.
Sorry to Bother You, which just came out recently. This is the feature debut by Boots Riley, a hip-hop artist, famous hip-hop artist who is in the movie or in the band The Coup.
Yes, The Coup.
Yeah, which I'm not super familiar with because I'm super lame.
Well, they did the soundtrack for the movie, so all the music that we just listened to in the movie is all Boots Riley.
But they've been around for a long time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I heard a little bit of this coming out of the festival circuit, I think. I saw some early trailers that I was really excited about. The stars, Lakeith Stanfield, who was in Get Out and Straight Outta Compton. We've been seeing him more and more and more.
He's in Atlanta, the show with Donald Glover as well. And actually, I just read that Donald Glover was supposed to be the lead in this movie, but he couldn't because he was in Solo. So he recommended Lakeith Stanfield for this film.
Good recommend.
Yeah.
Good recommendation.
Yeah.
This also stars Tessa Thompson, who's was in the last Thor movie, as well as Creed. And she's going to be in Creed 2, Dear White People. Mm-hmm. I've been a fan of hers. She was just in Annihilation, which was great. How do I set this up?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
This movie is cray-cray.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead.
I mean, basic logline, it's a guy who's broke in Oakland, in a different type of Oakland, not
alternate reality Oakland.
This is alternate reality Oakland. And he decides to get a job as a telemarketer at a place that will hire him because they'll hire literally anybody.
I've interviewed for jobs like that.
And learns to use his quote unquote white voice in order to sell more products. And then it just goes batshit crazy from there. So that's pretty much the
gist.
Premise. Yeah.
I guess the sort of the hook is that he turns out to be really good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes to a moral impasse where does he support a company that exploits people by pretending to be white over the phone? Or does he join his, you know, people within his race and social class in the fight against inequality? I will say off the bat, I really, really, really like this movie. And one of the reasons I really like it is because it is woke as fuck.
It is. It is, absolutely.
And I know that's a super obnoxious thing to say, but there was a plenty of points in this movie. And it, I mean, I guess broadly speaking, this is a comedy.
Kind absolutely.
Of an absurdist comedy, a surreal comedy, and sort of, if I'm allowed to be super annoying, I would say kind of Kafka-esque.
Yeah.
And we, the last movie I think I saw with both of you, no, the last movie I saw with both of you was The Incredibles, but one of the, a movie sort of in this vein, or it sort of in the way that they approach character and world building and kind of absurdism, that we saw together was Mother.
Oh, yeah.
Which kind of takes a sort of alternate reality look at the world and sort of the, this kind of, surrealism.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also reminded me a lot of the movie High Rise with Tom Hiddlesticks,
which I have not seen yet.
Yeah,
we should have watched that.
And there's a lot of these kind of movies, and or Orson Welles' The Trial comes to mind, which was actually based
which
on
which is
Kafka.
The Kafka. Yeah,
yeah, that movie, The Double, Jesse Eisenberg kind of plays in this water,
which is Dostoevsky.
And usually, I'm not a big fan of that take, like short of Cronenberg's Naked Lunch, which I kind of like just because it's so bloody nutty.
I wouldn't say it because Cronenberg is a bit more about body horror, and this is definitely not in that vein. Yeah. This is very much.
But it has that sort of, am I seeing what's really happening, or is this in the character's mind?
Yes, absolutely.
Or is this just metaphor? It has that kind of playful quality to the world building.
There's some really amazing shots in here where it is kind of, like, is this really happening or is this just in the character's mind? Like, for one thing, when he does talk to people on the phone, his office, desk that he's sitting in literally drops into the living rooms of the people that he's on the phone with.
His clients.
To speak with them specifically. So, and that's really interesting. I really love there's this part, where, it's like a montage of him like gaining more money and more wealth because of how well he's doing at the business, and his old broke television literally rips apart and a brand new 3D television
grows
out of it.
A lot of the production design and sort of the stylistics reminded me a lot of video director Eternal Sunshine.
Michel Gondry. Which was, that's very funny that you said that, because there's a part in the movie where they show this, like, animation. And it says that it is...
Claymation.
And it says that it is directed by Michel Dongry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, a little metatextual wink and nod.
Very metatextual nod to Michel Gondry, which I looked at you like, did you get that?
Totally missed that. Yeah. Totally missed that. But then that just affirms my original feelings, which to me, this was like Michel Gondry meets David Lynch through the filter of Spike Lee.
Very much. Yes, absolutely. I would say that. And it's very Spike Lee-esque. It's very much like Get Out. Yeah. Oh, I could say so many things about this movie. It's so good.
Well, I think the reason I appreciated it more than those other movies that I mentioned, those other kind of surrealist, Kafka-esque, psychological dramas or whatever, I think it's because, A, it's really funny. There are so many great bits in this movie. Great, just standalone comedic sequences and scenes and dialogue. Very well written, very clever, very smart. And then the other thing is that while it's all surreal and weird and kind of otherworldly, the metaphors are really, really grounded in very true and very real things that are happening now. And we can, if you're paying even the remote amount of attention, you can notice things every single scene where you're like, yes, this is what's being talked about in the news right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the metaphor never floats away too high or too elevated or never gets too artsy or up its own ass. It always feels like it's making a political point and, sort of an activist bent to the movie itself, which, you know, Tessa Thompson, who's made a career out of playing performers and activists mm-hmm. in in all of her movies, she kind of gets to be sort of the manifestation of that sort of artistic thrust of the movie. But, I mean, let's just talk about scenes, because I think there's so many good ones. What was your favorite one?
I don't know if it's, like, a favorite scene, but I keep thinking, it's more of just, like, these, like, moments in the movie that kept happening with the, where the further that the main character gets into the, the further he climbs up the ladder, like, and he's acquiring all this wealth, is like the his living it constantly gets whiter. Like,
you noticed that too.
I did. And, like, everything's getting cleaner, more pristine, and like it's. I don't know. I that was really interesting to me, and like where I was talking with a friend of mine before I saw this movie, and we were talking about like code switching, and it just like how like yeah he's like he's putting on this
a front
putting on a front yeah to like blend in with like with white people and I found that really really fascinating, and I feel ill-equipped sometimes to talk about this movie, because there's so much like talking about like with like a black culture and the,
And you know what, I was a little bit nervous about that myself, and yeah. I'm sure that there are some references here that are probably going over my head a little bit,
because they're very
within that culture, and maybe even not only just black culture, but specifically North Bay black culture.
Oh yeah, it takes place in Oakland, so
yeah, so there could be definitely stuff about Boots Riley that I don't know that he's bringing in. Mm-hmm. So there is some stuff where I'm like, okay, that probably means something, but then there's a lot of things that, you know, like, yes, it's talking about the black struggle specifically because the character is black. But if you look at like his working crew that decide to strike and try and start a union for telemarketers, or you look at his, another weird side plot in this movie we didn't even get into, but there's this, this mega corporation that creates or builds and puts out product as fast as possible. Very, very much, I think, is talking directly or criticizing directly Amazon.
It absolutely is.
And you have this character played by
Armie Hammer,
who I think is kind of a stand-in for not only Jeff Bezos, but just every Silicon Valley rich asshole who thinks he's doing the greater good, but it's actually just a beaming light of the 1%.
Mm-hmm. It's also that's also very specific to Oakland and the Bay Area as well,
yes.
Because Amazon took over parts of the Bay Area, and Google as well took over parts of, my sister used to live in Oakland, and so Google bought out all of these lower income housing that was created specifically for, of course, lower income housing people, so that people from their company could live in San Francisco with lower rent. And they created their own bus system within San Francisco that's only for Google employees, so that they could be they could live in the city because they're younger people, and then be bussed over to their actual job, which is in Silicon Valley, which is a little bit farther away from San Francisco and the city.
Yeah.
So it is a big problem in the area right now, and speaks a lot to gentrification. It speaks a lot to commercialization of property and corporatization, and because there's housing specific for you know, employees of this company, it speaks a lot to, like, you know, corporatization of people as a commodity. And that's a problem.
Yes, because another big complaint against Amazon right now is that they're really bad to their employees. And like, Amazon drivers are driving around with piss bottles because they're being timed, and they'll be punished if they don't deliver things at a specific fast amount of time, or they can be fired at any moment. They're being woefully underpaid. Yeah. While Jeff Bezos is actually finding ways to not pay taxes at all, and legislating against taxes that would help the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, these Silicon Valley millionaires who are going to work have to step over the homeless people who are sleeping on the steps of their workplace environments.
Who can't afford housing because they bought out all the lower income housing.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. So the point is that, you know, outside of the, of course, the racial inequality problems that are happening all over the country, but especially is, a thing in Oakland where there were, you know, I mean, if you've ever seen, Fruitvale Station is, of course, specific to Oakland. Yeah. That's obviously brought up in this movie. It's very much about a racial divide and lower income housing, but it's also about corporatization and the problems of, you know,
income inequality in general.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yes, of course, there is a lot of like black cultural things that we're specifically not going to understand as much.
Yeah, especially when it comes to code switching and that type of thing. Yeah, which actually, funnily enough, the other time Katie was on the podcast, we were talking about the movie Keanu. I talked a lot about code switching because that's a lot of what that movie's about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting that you come on for both of these movies. But I think that there's enough here that's universal that you don't feel like you're, you know, a voyeur into some other person's perspective or world or whatever. And actually, I always believe that the more specific you make something, the more universal it becomes.
Yeah.
When you tell one person's story, it becomes everyone's story.
Mm-hmm. I would say that as well. Like, this movie is definitely something that could be good for everybody to watch. Like, I think everybody should watch it because it's a very funny movie.
Very good comedy.
Yeah. But also is a really good commentary on everything that's going on right now.
Absolutely.
And I just think everybody should watch it. I'm going to put it on Facebook later as like, everybody should watch it. Yeah. Please watch this movie.
Yeah. And I'll say that I definitely recommend it. And I think that it's, one of my favorite movies I've seen this year pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it is pretty, wild. It's pretty, pretty daringly stylistic. And there are things in here that I think might throw people off.
Yes.
I think that if you're not used to seeing movies that take a little bit more chances or are a little bit more experimental, even though this movie, I think, is trying to reach a broader audience than an art film in quotations, it does have those leanings. And I think that it could turn some people off. I think those people should watch it anyway.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot to learn here. Do we want to get into spoiler zone? Or Katie, what's your overall take first? Before we do that, do you endorse Sorry to Bother You?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's very good.
So yes, you did like it.
Yes, I liked it a lot. Yes.
Okay. Let's get into spoilers.
Yeah.
Okay, from here we're going to get into some heavy spoilers. So if you don't want that ruined for you, go ahead and fast forward the podcast to the hour and 25-second mark to our Netflix homework. This reminds me a lot of the movie that I saw earlier this year, Tully. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
You saw Tully? Did you not see Tully?
Tully was Tully.
Tully with Charlize Theron about her being pregnant.
No.
And she gets a wet nurse to help her out.
Not a wet nurse.
Okay.
What?
Night nanny. Okay. Oh, well, I won't spoil that then. But there's a moment in that movie that kind of I found regrettable for the overall plot. I think there was a reveal in that movie that was unnecessary because I felt that the movie was already saying everything they had to say before the reveal made that more explicit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something like that happens in this movie as well. This is spoiler zone, so I can say it outright. There are horse people.
Yeah, that was weird.
And in a movie that's already pretty eccentric.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was necessary. I think that he could have come to his own conclusions by himself. Well, we're in spoiler zone, so it's happening.
Yeah.
So he's like real deep into corporate America at that point, and like does not seem to be like moving backwards at all, just going straight forward and getting into money, kill, but which is on her
earrings
that won't find them. And then the only thing that turns them around is that the corporation that he's about to work for is
turning their workforce into horse people so that they can be stronger and faster at their jobs. Yeah, I don't think it was necessary.
It's a pretty extreme take on the metaphor. I think the metaphor had already spelled itself out pretty easily.
Yeah.
I think once you see the people in the housing, those cramped housing, those working in the factories and stuff like that, I think they've already made that point. And I think that, you know, it could even be as simple as something like he's making him take a drug that makes him work harder or something like that without actually going into prosthetics and horse people.
Yeah.
I'm a little confused by the ending because, like, they had a – so the main character is freaking out that he's going to become one of the horse people. And, like, he makes all these after it's like his whole experience of being betraying his friends, and like he makes all these amends to his friends, and then but he ends up turning into a horse anyway at the end. Like, yeah. I wasn't really sure what they were trying to say.
I have a theory about the whole horse people conundrum. Yeah. I feel like there's another movie that Boots Riley wanted to make that he tried to shove into this movie. Okay. I think that he's a fan of genre. I think he's a fan of something, say, like The Howling, which some of the horse people stuff reminded me of, and the prosthetics especially. And I think that there was a part of him that, you know, maybe the movie started with horse people. Maybe that was the, maybe that was the seed that grew the rest of this movie.
Yeah.
But I think it's a kill your baby situation, and he should have killed that baby.
Yeah, I think he should have killed that darling.
I think somebody, you know, it's great that he had the freedom to make the movie as eccentric as he wanted to do, because I think we got a lot of great stuff in there because of that.
Yeah.
But I think that a producer, whoever, somebody that he would listen to said, let's try a draft without the horse people. Let's try a draft. Let's see what it looks like. You know, just nudge him back just a little bit, because that and some of the other eccentricities of the movie does kind of feel first-time directory. Like not that he doesn't pull them off. It's good prosthetics. It you know, the pacing of the movie is good and everything. But it does feel like a director who's excited to try every trick in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And like he may never be able to make another movie.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that really didn't need to go as far as it did. I think everything else would have worked perfectly without that.
I love Armie Hammer in this
movie. I love Armie Hammer in this movie.
Like, this is two for two now after Call Me By Your Name and this. Like, Armie Hammer starting to, like, live down The Lone Ranger.
Which is a terrible film. But, I mean that this movie and The Social Network, Armie Hammer can do some great things in
if film. You let him.
If you let him, if you give him the chance. And
here he gets to be kind of edgy. He gets to be like unlikable. Like,
he's very unlikable, but also kind of like, I want to be your friend, which
he reminds me a lot of those kind of asshole characters that they introduce in that show, the Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Those
very much so.
Those kind of Bezos or what's the guy who does Shark Tank?
Don't remember his name.
I don't remember. He's probably going to run for president too.
I hope not.
But he kind of reminds me of that guy a little bit. Mark Cuban.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That
sort of type. I mean, at one point he always talks about how like what he's doing and the work that he's producing is like going to change the world. It's for the world. It's for the greater good. And that's always sort of like, you know, that's why, and now I'm going to be on a soapbox. That's why the left, or, you know, the Americans kind of center left, never criticizes Silicon Valley, is because that's the one percenters they get their money from. And so they can exploit everybody and never get any criticism from the left. But it's, you know, we'll spend all day long talking about the Koch brothers.
I can see how this is definitely a commentary on exploitation in general, not just of black people, which it definitely makes comments on that specifically right before the scene in which we are introduced to the horse people as a thing.
Yeah. Well, I think the horse people actually is kind of extending the slavery metaphor too, because there is they're talking about sort of America's history.
It's not a metaphor. There is an actual, it's actually stated that this company is creating slave labor.
Yeah.
And it's in like the newspapers that come up throughout the movie and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, it's not just about exploitation of Black people, of Black people having to switch their narrative in order to, like, work within American yeah. culture, literally work, and then also, like, be appealing to the mass audiences.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And this is where, like, I wish I knew more about Boots Riley, because yeah. I feel like he's talking a lot about what it is to be a performer, having to expand your audience and climb the ranks there. I think there's probably a lot of Black performers, Black actors, Black directors, whatever, who have experienced this very thing where you're entering into wider and wider mm-hmm. territories.
There's that moment yeah. in the movie mm-hmm. where he's at this full of white people party, and they tell him to start rapping, not because he knows how to rap, but because he's Black. And
the joke is he can't.
Yeah, the joke is he can't. Well, it's not even a joke. Like, he says specifically, no, I can't do that, just because I'm Black doesn't mean I can rap. And they're chanted him to rap at them. And yeah. then he can't, and because he already stated that. And so the only thing that gets them to be on his side and get excited is when he starts yelling out,
like, the N-word.
N-word shit, just over and over again. Yeah. And they cheer for that.
I think it's Donald Glover in one of his stand-ups is he talks about going to a Kanye West concert and how, like, there are a bunch of white people at, like, this concert. I think it was in Texas or something. And then, like, yeah. And I'm not familiar with Kanye West's music or anything, but, like, there's a song like full of the N-word, and like it's, and then all the white people are like excited to use that word in that context, right, and they look straight at him.
Yeah, I think it's more of like, you know, you have to expand your music to a wider audience, and they don't care about you having a voice. They care about you having that specific voice that appeals to white audiences because they view it as, this is other. Black culture.
Yeah, yeah. Performative Blackness.
Exactly. Yeah. Performative Blackness.
You know, the equestrian angle aside, I highly recommend this movie. I give it an A-. And that's saying a lot of how well everything else works, because there is a lot of horse stuff in this movie.
That's what's knocking it down.
Yeah, that's what's knocking it down. But the rest of it is so strong that it's still an A movie for me, because it had me laughing the whole time, had me intrigued. And I bought into the psychedelic stuff without it ever feeling like it was floating away from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't. It felt like somebody coming off of an acid trip, like not like deep into work, yeah. you know,
on the other side of a K-hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like they're coming out of it. They're still seeing a little bit of stuff, but it's not that bad.
If you were to grade it, what would you give it?
I would also give it an A-. It's, I think that's, I don't mind the horse thing as much as you do. I do think it's a bit of a step too far. I also think it's partly, it's a little off the rails, and it didn't need to go that far. And I do think that it has to do with the fact that it's a first time director just being like, I want to do all of the things.
Yeah. I want prosthetics. Let's do it.
Yeah. and it wasn't necessary. The metaphor could have been come across no matter what, but everything else about it is fantastic. It's funny. The acting is great. The storylines are great. Yeah. I give it an A-.
Also, a really good performance from Danny Glover. Who, you know, when he comes in, he comes with his A-game. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't know if you guys follow Danny Glover on Twitter, but he's extremely politically active.
I did not know
and
that.
He's always showing himself like at different rallies and stuff, and like he's in it. So I could see him connecting a lot with the material as well. There was also a lot of stuff in here. I just want to say this because I almost forgot. There's also a lot of stuff in here with like these fake TV shows and stuff.
They watch people kick the shit out of each other. I got the kick shit out of me. Yeah.
Yeah. And that reminded me a lot. And like how pop culture like takes something to extremes and sort of like adopts something and exploits that.
Yeah.
That stuff reminded me a lot of Network.
That made me think a lot about these cell phone videos that we'll see on Facebook or the news of people getting pulled over by the police and getting beat up or being killed it made me think about specifically police brutality videos and we see so many of them and it's kind of a sick entertainment
it's like the new version of Cops almost.
I was a little disturbed. It was a good metaphor, but I was really disturbed by the thought.
Yeah. That's a really great point.
Yeah.
Agreed.
No, I didn't. Yeah. I honestly didn't think about that, but that's absolutely what it's saying.
It just registered as sort of dystopia world building, but that's true.
It reminded me of Idiocracy, but because Idiocracy has that thing where the Oscar winning movie is called Fart, and it's literally a butt the whole movie. But no, that's absolutely what it's talking about. And great point.
So what would you give the movie, Katie?
Oh, yeah. And I think I'm on the same page, A-. So the horse stuff, I think I kind of pushed the, the genre or the, it kind of felt a little, like it was pushing it a little far. I got what it was saying already without that.
Without going that.
Yeah, without getting that. Psychedelic.
Okay, that's good. Let's go ahead and get into the Netflix homework then, which you guys assigned me, April in the Extraordinary World. And Katie, why don't you explain what happens in this movie?
Oh, April in the Extraordinary World. So this is a French, Belgian, and Canadian production. It is about a girl who... this is a post Napoleon War era, and there's a family of scientists trying to develop this serum for everlasting life, and they're trying to develop an army of super soldiers to fight, and they're administering this drug there's a lot of animal experimentation, and this girl, her parents end up getting taken when she's young, and she runs away with her cat, who happens to talk. This cat is a failed experiment of the everlasting serum, and for some reason they gave him the ability to speak. Oh yeah, that's also a whole thing in the beginning.
Yeah,
there's a lot of and it's kind of a big I think it's a big commentary on there's a lot of environmentalism overtones in this movie. The air quality gets so bad, all the trees get cut down in this movie. Yeah.
There's a big conceit that, this is sort of another alternate reality movie where because they explain in an info dump at the beginning of the movie, some exposition of basically the electronic revolution never really happened. So
it's a steampunk movie.
Yeah. It's a steampunk movie. And it's a big excuse for why there's no light bulbs and things like that. And everything still runs on coal.
Yeah. So this main character, she runs away with her cat. And then 10 years later, after her parents are taken, she's an orphan. She's living with her, and her cat's really sick. So she's trying to develop the everlasting serum that her parents were trying to discover. So she's really invested in chemistry she's being spied on by the man that took her parents or was trying to take her parents, and it's just an adventure on for quest to find this everlasting serum is their solution to surviving the
coalocalypse.
Coalocalypse, I guess you would call it. Which I find,
and there's also
a strange way to put all your energy in.
Yeah.
And why not plant more trees? There's one tree left in the entire, country France.
Yeah.
And there's also a totalitarian government.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, that gets kind of weird. This movie was nominated for a few awards. I think it won the Annie Award, for most outstanding, it got an outstanding achievement, an editorial and an animated feature production, or it was nominated for an Annie Award. It won in 2015 Annecy International Animated Film Festival for Best Film,
and it was involved in a César Awards for best animated film. Blah blah blah. Yeah, yeah.
By the way, if you guys don't know what the Annie Awards is, it's like the Oscars of animation.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Which she, Katie, was nominated for, if you didn't know.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, I watched this today. I don't know if I have a lot to say about it. It's a steampunk movie.
Yep.
Pretty solidly in that genre, which is a genre that I'm generally not that excited by.
Nope.
Outside of Guillermo del Toro, I don't find a lot of steampunk stuff that interesting. It reminded me a lot of an anime I saw a while ago called Steam Boy.
Yeah.
That was done by the guy who did Akira, but not nearly as interesting as Akira. And also kind of reminded me of that movie Nine, not the 8.5 musical, but
the Stitch dudes.
It kind of had that vibe to it as well, in that it looked really cool. Love the production design.
Yeah, like a lot of like Adventures of Tintin kind of inspiration. Yeah.
Okay. I have notes. It has so much exposition throughout the movie that it just is so super problematic.
There's a lot of talking.
It starts out with about 10 minutes of just
info dump.
Straight up exposition that goes through like 300 years of history. And I understand why they felt
in the Napoleonic Wars, blah 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 blah.
Because the movie starts out with Napoleonic Wars, and then it turns out that Napoleon just keeps going. So like World War One never happened.
It's like a big what if.
Because it's just Napoleon. Napoleon took over all of Europe and is the emperor of all of Europe. So there is no World War One or World War Two because there is no like Germany, basically.
Yeah.
I understand that they have to set that up, but it goes through like this huge amount of history immediately in this like newsreel style. And
it's very uninviting.
Yeah. It's very uninviting, and it doesn't really like, it's like if anybody showed up late to this movie, they're lost. They have no idea what's going on.
I'm wondering how much of it was like because it was based off of a graphic novel, I think. There's a graphic novel that like
I also wondered if that was added on because it was originally a French language film to English, and maybe there's some history there that's kind of assumed for French culture, but not to. Wouldn't translate, so they maybe tacked it on. I don't know if that was already there.
Yeah,
I don't think so, just because like that's the way it's filmed as well.
I mean,
if they just changed the language, that would be fine. That would make more sense. But it's not just the language; it's in the animation.
Although some of the translation, I can't say for certain because I don't speak French. But generally speaking, the dialogue was pretty awkward. Throughout.
It's very there's this awkward romance situation too that feels like really forced in.
Which is very forced in. Like, which is another thing. It's very expository in that regard as well. Because like the only reason to assume that they are in love is because the cat keeps saying it.
Or he's like, I think she likes you.
I think she's in love. But you're in love.
And then you fell in love.
You're in love. And it's like
voiced by Tony Hale of Arrested Development.
Yeah. We went from one Arrested Development guy to another.
Well, like their first meeting is them making out in an effort to, I guess, protect her from getting arrested.
Yeah, exactly. So from that point on, I was like, yeah, isn't that kind of like the deal? isn't that sort of assumed?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Nah, for me, nah.
Going back to the whole, like, so I guess there's Jacques Tardy.
Tardy.
I'm sure I butchered that. This is based off of a graphic novel series called The Adventures of Adele, and I'm wondering if that's like the reason for like all the exposition and some of the like if how much was stuffed into this movie.
That would make sense.
It kind of has that The Last Airbender vibe to it in that sense.
Yeah. It was a beautiful art style, I thought. Like, the movement and the animation is really well done.
I like the style of it. I like the look of the characters. They have a little bit of like a Doonesbury quality to the to their faces and stuff.
No, the background art is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It is beautiful. Yeah.
Very detailed. Yeah. And even though like steampunk as an aesthetic, it doesn't like I thought that it looked cool here. I like the world building a lot. I just was not invested in April and her journey or story.
No.
And I don't know if that was the fault of the movie or if or what, but this was a little bit of a difficult watch just because as cool as it looked, it was kind of boring.
Yeah. It has so many really good ideas, but the execution is really not great. So,
yeah. There was never really a villain. There's kind of like a pursuer, I suppose, this kind of KGB-ish type guy, voiced by Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, who I don't even know why he's
sort of wasted.
It. Yeah, yeah. There's really no reason for his character at all. And then there's the reveal of the lizards.
Yeah,
and it's like, let's talk about lizard people.
So more lizard people, more animal. So,
I felt that was a big jump the shark moment. And
it was alluded to in the beginning of the film that they're the two
experiments from the beginning.
Yeah,
which is fine, but like it. I don't understand why it was shrouded in secrecy throughout half of the movie.
Right.
I know. They were really always pushing that.
They're always in shadow, like everything like that. And then it's not even revealed like on camera that they're it's like a cartoon within the cartoon that's like, hey, these are lizard people.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, well, it was like it was also strange because, like, I for a while I thought they were going to be apes. Like, I kind of forgot that they had slithered in the beginning, but like, because like, there were like all these apes in cages before, and like, they didn't make apes didn't make an appearance at all. Those lizards got real busy. They had a lot of children.
Like 400 children.
I don't know how many eggs are born into a litter of lizards or a Komodo dragon.
They didn't even call their kids by name. They called them by number. It was like number 232 and number 346. And stuff like that. So they had a lot.
Well, they make a lot of allusions to fascism, Nazi Germany kind of stuff. Which in this version of the alternate 1940s, that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if you're from France, if you're telling a story about the 40s, it's kind of hard to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of finds its way in there anyway. I guess it's sort of just seeing a foreign film, seeing an animated foreign film. It's interesting and it's very not American in its sensibility. But as a story, it was not super engaged.
No, I would agree. It's not really engaging. It's mostly exposition. It even ends with exposition. It's exposition, and then something happens, and then it says 10 years later, and I was
like, what? It jumps ahead in time twice.
Everything about this is pretty. It's very pretty movie. So animation style is very cool, and I really like the background art a lot.
Yeah.
But in all,
good use of CGI every now and then.
Yeah,
yeah. Very subtle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Howl's Moving Castle moment.
This definitely throws to some Miyazaki movies.
Oh yeah, I feel like his influence on this stylistically a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even just with the pacing.
I know. But other than that, like, the story just doesn't grab hold very much. It helped a lot that we were drinking last night.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as a grade, I would give this like a C minus.
I'd say it's a C.
Like a B.
All right.
You're
I'm a little partial.
You can appreciate more of the technicality.
Because you know the technical.
It's not just the technical. So I don't know. I don't know. I guess the aesthetic stuff.
The story beats hit you harder.
The story is like, I don't know. Yeah. It had a lot of cool ideas.
Yeah.
Like, there were a lot of ideas in this movie, and I would agree that, the execution didn't really work for it, but...
It's alright.
Yeah.
It's a movie.
It's a movie.
It's a movie.
It's worth watching, but, other than that...
Yeah. Okay, well, that's the show. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Yes. I think, Amanda, you've probably been a guest on the show more than anybody else.
Really?
Yeah. If I tallied it up.
I've been on like 4 times, maybe?
5 or 6, I think. Yeah, I'd have to go back and check, but you know, you might get the gold star standard now.
I'll take gold stars. I'll
get a five timers jacket. But yeah, so thank you for coming on. If anybody had anything to say about anything we talked about in this episode, you can contact us at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at JabberPodcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/JabberPodcast, where we post our news stories. Sometimes we have listener surveys, things like that. And you can follow me individually at VCCassidy. On Twitter, and you can read my reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at SaladForkReviews.blogspot.com. You can stream the show and find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Player.fm, Pocket Cast, the Windows Podcast Network, and Google Play. And I'm going to try and get us on Spotify, because I know that podcasts are doing that now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are Spotify premium holders. So that is the wave of the future. Where do people find you? What's your stuff?
I don't have stuff.
Anything you want to promote?
No. I have an Instagram, but I don't post to it. I have a Snapchat, but it's mostly just Katie's cat. She's adorable. I'm good. I can promote Katie. Katie is an amazing animator. She works for Titmouse Studios most of the time, but she does do other stuff for other places. And quite recently, she was working on the newest, the app that is related to the latest season of Big Mouth.
Yes,
Big and Mouth, she's October got 5th, another big, two. Big thing that we can't talk about because she's NBA.
Yes,
yeah. out the wazoo, but it's pretty awesome that she's doing it.
Do you have a website where people can find your stuff or be able to see like a reel or something?
Yeah, I have a demo reel. It's mostly full of Son of Zorn and Kirby Buckets and Home DreamWorks Home. But it's katietambor.com. Tambor spelled TAMBOER. And I have a couple of films on there. And yeah, if anybody's looking for a 2D animator, I do freelance, so yeah, you can reach me at KM as in Mary, tambor.com@gmail.com. And so yeah, if you're in need of experience or anywhere, yeah, hit me up. I can do it. I can do things.
Cool. We also have friends who do podcasts. I always encourage people to listen to. We have Rod and Moksha over at The Listening Party. And we have Patrick over at Almost Educational, with the show he does with his friend Dennis. And as well as Mike Fallick over at Let's Start a Cult / Hack Thought is the new name of the show. And Buddy and Alice over at Those Happy Places. And who else? Adam Connie over at the Adamant podcast. That's one of Keith's friends over there in San Diego. Did I say Bill and Brian over at the Great Albums podcast?
You sure didn't.
Okay, well, you should be listening to them too. And I think that's it. So that's the show.
Oh, actually, Alice is also on another podcast that I can't remember the name of right now. But it's she recorded it the other night.
Rogue One.
Is she a guest on it or a regular co-host?
She is a regular co-host.
Just a Rogue One podcast.
Rogue One podcast. And they talk about different parts of Rogue One. I can't remember the fucking name of it, but maybe you can look it up and put it in the end credits later.
That is super specific. Okay.
Yeah. She's super into Rogue One.
I could probably do at least 25 episodes on Return of the Jedi, but, you know. Episode 1, Ewoks aren't that bad.
I mean, yeah, that's
Episode 2.
Controversial statement.
Episode 2, it is the most explicitly based on the tropes of a Western. Episode 3, I'm going to quit doing that.
I agree with that. So check that out, too, because I think that's actually a really cool podcast.
Do we have, like, a catchphrase? Keith always usually says something goofy at the end.
Oh.
Cats are adorable. Love them and donate to the ASPCA as much as you can. That's not happy. I just gave money to the ASPCA.